hear about Wi-Fi all the time. It's available at the stores where we shop and in the restaurants where we eat. It's like magic, bringing us the internet with no wires attached. Well, almost anywhere these days. And it's certainly much more convenient to have it in your home, too. Well, today we're going to be talking about home Wi-Fi. Hi, Jill Nadeau here. I'm in for Larry Mueller today. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Jesse LeGrew is back with us. He is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, DOIT. He focuses on desktop and laptop security projects. Jesse's going to be talking about what you need to set up Wi-Fi in your home, and he'll also answer your other computer questions. So give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And you can also post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. And for those who don't know, Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Jesse, so glad to have you back.
Great to be here.
So do things slow down a little bit when the students aren't around, or they get busier for you?
It actually depends. It's a little bit of both.
Okay.
So right now, for a lot of people, it gets a lot busier right now.
Yeah.
With student orientation going around, all summer,
mm-hmm.
there's just different things going on, and it does look a little bit quieter on the streets.
It does.
But there are a lot of people doing tours, and a lot of people are trying to catch up and prepare for the fall, and there's
sure.
a lot of other summer activities. So for us, it's about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Some groups just, they have other things to focus on.
Okay. Well, you're here today to talk about setting up Wi-Fi at home, and I was just chatting with you earlier. I just went through this, and I thought, you know what? A lot of people probably are confused by some of this, so why don't we start from the basics? What is Wi-Fi, and how does it work?
So Wi-Fi is, and I'll try to keep a lot of the technical stuff out.
It can be technical, yeah.
Generally what Wi-Fi is, it's basically using, it's wireless fidelity,
mm-hmm.
Is what it stands for. And it really allows you to connect your device, whether it's a laptop or a cell phone, to the internet without using any cables. And there's a variety of technologies that can do this. But in this case, Wi-Fi is a little bit different from Bluetooth, but it can allow you to do the same thing. Wi-Fi, kind of creates what they call a LAN, a local area network, whether it's at your home or at your work. So you can ditch all the cables, which is
yes.
what a lot of people really, really love to do, either because the cables are just too cumbersome, or there's, you really don't have infrastructure in a house, and like, oh yeah, we have data jacks in every room. It's not something that most people have,
right.
and running cables can be expensive. It can be, a lot of work.
Yeah.
So people do use wireless at home so they can connect to their internet provider and then kind of broadcast that wireless connectivity throughout a limited location so you can connect with other devices. So it really is just a medium to allow you to connect to the internet, replacing wires with this wireless signal.
Are there any disadvantages then for having Wi-Fi in your home?
There are a few. Generally, wireless is slower. Now, for most of the wireless, they have a lot of different types, A, B, G, N, A, C,
yes.
and so there's a lot of letters, makes it very confusing. AC is the fastest. The biggest thing is, what are you going to do with it? So, there may or may not really be a disadvantage depending on what you're doing. Generally, wireless is slower. A cabled connection can be faster, but if your internet connection itself isn't that fast, it may not matter. So it kind of depends on what you're doing internally, what you're doing to connect to the internet. Wireless is also, in general, just less secure because you are broadcasting the signal. If somebody's able to get into your wireless network, they're able to really see a lot of information. If you have a cabled network connection, it at least reduces the likelihood of someone around your neighborhood trying to snoop and get information or even just use your internet access, which is also very common.
Nobody does that. I don't know what you're talking about.
but what it does is it makes it more difficult to tap into.
Okay.
It's a little bit faster, And in some cases, it can actually be a little bit cheaper, because when you pay for wireless, you also have to make sure all of your devices do have something that can use Wi-Fi or wireless. Most of the time now, it's not really a concern. 5 or 10 years ago, it was more of a concern where you might have to buy an adapter or another piece of hardware. So most devices now are going to have wireless built in anyway. It just depends on how you're going to use it from a day-to-day. And both can actually be more expensive, but it really depends on how you want to use it. And a lot of technophiles will really purchase some expensive equipment to do some very unique things. One person, for example, I know they had a barn, and it was 2 miles away from their residence, and they wanted to get the internet there. So they actually used Wi-Fi to create a directional antenna to bridge the two locations so you could actually get the internet at that location.
2 miles. That's impressive.
Yeah, and you have to have line of sight, and there's a lot of other things that you have to do. But, you know, Wi-Fi, that's an easier thing where, you know, you don't have to build, you know, dig a trench and pay somebody a lot of money to bury cables. You have some more capabilities, but, you know, you're also at the mercy of everything around you and your environment, where if something, you know, interrupts a signal, whether it's weather or just a bird flying through it, those are possibilities too.
Okay. Well, now someone's out there and they're saying, okay, I do want Wi-Fi in my home. What do I have to purchase to do that?
And this could partially depend on your provider. So I guess in this case, I'll consider Wi-Fi just to be, you want to turn on your device and you want to connect to the internet wirelessly. There's a lot of other things you can do with it. We'll just assume it's for internet.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the providers will actually, or, you know, what they call ISPs, internet service providers, they might give you a device that has it built in.
Right.
And you can turn it on and it works.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that you might consider is changing your Wi-Fi password. So what you need in order to connect to it, just to make sure it's more secure. There's a lot of other tweaks you can do to Wi-Fi to make it secure, but for now, just functionality. It might come from your ISP. Definitely, that's one of the questions I would ask for them right away. What hardware do you give for that? They might have other benefits there. Generally, you would want one or two things. One is going to be a router,
mm-hmm.
Which is usually used to share one internet connection with multiple devices.
And usually there's little antennas on it, right? So that kind of helps people to know that's the router.
Yep.
Okay.
And that can be, and that's another interesting point, and that's where it gets really complicated, because you can have something called a router, which mm-hmm. is to share the internet. You can have something called an access point or a wireless access point, which may or may not be a router, so it may perform multiple functions.
Okay.
And that's where it gets a little bit confusing. And most of the devices are all-in-one, where you have a router and you have wireless in the same device, so you don't have to buy two or three different devices.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the easiest thing is to get a wireless router. If you have that, that's going to serve all of your needs, and all you have to do is really plug it into your internet connection and go from there.
So your internet connection, that's where the modem comes in, correct? That comes from your internet provider.
Correct.
You get a modem that comes into your home. Now, sometimes those two are combined, though, correct?
Sometimes those two or those three are combined.
Those three.
Where everything is in one device, and really what you get from your internet service provider is everything you need to connect to the internet, to do everything wirelessly and get on the internet or print to your printer. You don't need anything else. So it really does depend on what comes with it, but most of the time you're going to need a modem, which is basically taking your cable signal or whatever media is coming into your house to convert it into Ethernet. And then from there, you're going to have a router or a Wi-Fi that's going to, you know, broadcast and do all the other work for you.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do a variety.
Okay. And now if to, you know, kind of muddy the waters a little bit, say you're living in a house that's 2 floors or 3 floors, are there different types of routers that will then enable you to get that Wi-Fi on all those levels? Or do you need one for each level? I mean, what do you do for that?
And it actually depends on, one, the house construction. So one thing with wireless is any interference is going to degrade the signal, cause it to slow down. something they call, you know, a Faraday cage, which, you know, is basically just a big wire mesh. If you have a lot of wires between floors, it might cause the signal not to be able to go between floors, or it slow down so much where it doesn't work. In some cases, you may not be able to do it at all. In most cases, that's not going to be a problem, but it is a possibility. And you can get a lot of different devices to either extend the signal. So you can have wireless, basically two different wireless signals, one on the top floor, one on the bottom floor, or one per floor. The building construction definitely does matter. The amount of space or square footage also matters. What kind of wireless you're using, whether it's A, B, C, or A, B, G, A, C, N, all of that matters as well. So it gets really, really complicated. And most of the devices, I think, are going to be doing A, C, or N right now. But there could be some complications.
Okay. So, well, that was a lot of information, a lot of bites of information. But let's go to Erin. She's calling from Cobb, and she has a question about living out in the country. Hi, Erin. What's your question?
Hi. So this doesn't relate directly to what you're speaking about, but maybe it does in a way. The only internet we can really get where we live is satellite, which is very inconsistent at best. In fact, many times I get better service hot wiring to my phone using the mobile hotspot than I do from the satellite internet connection. And from what I'm hearing you say, it sounds like that the speed of the internet can also be complicated because we also use wireless in our house. And I was wondering what recommendations you have for people who live in the country.
Oh, I feel your pain because I have the same problem. What can she do?
So there are a few different options, and I was actually just trying to look in Cobb, Wisconsin, to see if there are other internet providers. The first thing I do is just look at your options because there might be multiple, and you might have neighbors that have different providers that they're used to. Since I haven't been around there, I'm not sure, but there could be some options. But as far as the speed, one thing you noted is that your cellular device seems to have pretty good internet access, possibly even better than what you're getting normally. One thing that is available from a lot of different cellular providers is something called a hotspot. It allows you to basically broadcast or rebroadcast that cellular signal at home. So that could be your wireless for your other devices. It could be going through your cell phone. It could be going through a separate device, but it could allow you to do that. But that also depends on taking a look at what your cellular plan is. Many times you are capped at a certain amount of data that you can use, and any going, you know, above and beyond that limit could incur significant charges. It always depends on your provider. So it's an option, but the cost might be much more than what you have for your standard internet.
Well, good luck, Erin. I know how frustrating that can be. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We've been talking with Jesse LeGru, a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Do you have a question? Well, give us a call. There's lines open. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn is going to be talking with historian John Meacham about the American Revolution and presidential history, just in time for Independence Day. That's at 2 o'clock on the Ideas Network. And right now, we are talking about computers and technology and all the fun stuff that goes with us with our guest, Jesse LeGru. And Jesse, let's go right back to the phones. Next up, we have Sharon in Belmont. Hi, Sharon. What's your question?
Hi. We've had a hard time getting our printer to work with Windows 10, and the program that I got into said we needed a new driver, and they wanted to charge us for it. And I wondered where I could go to get a new driver. And let me explain what I did. I really blew it, I'm afraid. The other day, when I was working on it, I got rid of the driver that was in the computer, and I don't know now if I can get another one just to download it.
What do you think, Jesse?
And there are a few things that you could do for printers that are a little bit older, and when you have newer operating systems, it can always be a challenge, sometimes because manufacturers won't always create a driver for these, for basically for a printer for the new operating system. They decide it's not worth the development time and may actually just recommend upgrading the printer. What I would do is, in this case, I would go to two sources generally. One is actually going to be HP.com, on basically on the internet. It sounds like you probably already contacted HP, however, and they may not have a driver available unless you pay. Is that correct?
Well, it wasn't HP that wanted to charge me. It was something else that said they would examine it, and they said I'd need a new driver. So that's as far as I got.
Okay. The first place I would go is actually directly to HP's website. They do have drivers you can actually download directly on the internet. They can also give you some information about what drivers are available, if there is one for Windows 10, if there will be one available for Windows 10. And at least it'll give you more information if HP itself is going to give a driver for that device. Do you happen to know the model?
It's an HP DeskJet D2543, and I could get into it in 2510, but I couldn't find a 2543.
But Jesse's actually kind of looking it up right now for you, Sharon, to see if maybe he can give you a little more help on that.
Yeah, and right now, so, and the first place I always go for any HP printer is really to go directly on their website. They do have it updated pretty regularly. You're going to get a lot of information. It's also going to tell you, even if they do have different options available or not, which sometimes you do run into the situation where they will simply not have an option for Windows 10. In this case, however, it actually looks like they do, which is actually kind of nice. So I would go to HP.com. Near the top of the website, it's going to have something called Software and Drivers, where you can actually search based on your model. And it does have one for the 2543, which it looks like it's a DeskJet all-in-one printer, and they do have one for Windows 10. They do have instructions on how to find what version of Windows 10, if it's 32 or 64-bit. In most cases, it's 64-bit. And you can actually download the drivers. You can install them. Even if you do remove the driver from your computer, if you run Windows Update or get them directly from HP or the manufacturer, you can download them again. So even if you remove them, there's a way to get them back.
Okay. Well, all is not lost, Sharon. So hopefully you'll be able to do that. Let's go to Louie in Wausau. Hi, Louie.
Hello. I have a modem, and it doesn't work after 50 feet from the modem, and where I want to be in my house is 60 feet. And I heard there's something called an extender.
Yes, and you can get an extender. And is this just for like wireless internet?
Yes, it's wireless internet, and what it is, it's an iPad. My iPhones and other things work at a longer distance than that, but this new iPad seems to be fussy, and just at that 50-foot point, it won't work anymore. It won't pick up the signal.
Okay, and there could be a few different, there are a few options. One is to get a wireless extender that can extend the range to a certain point. It always depends on what the wireless signal you have, your originating source is, what the version is. You can get a wireless extender, and there's a lot of different manufacturers, which also kind of complicates it a bit. Do you know what manufacturer of wireless modem or router that you have?
Yeah, it's a... what do you call that?
He's looking. He's looking, Jesse. Okay.
It's a Netgear.
Yeah, that's pretty popular.
Netgear.
And The good thing with Netgear is that it's a pretty popular manufacturer, meaning that they probably even have a lot of options that either they sell or other options they'd recommend changing on the device itself. One complicating factor with a lot of the wireless is there are so many different options where you have wireless N or wireless AC. Having all the options on kind of limits the options if you use kind of native wireless. Like, for in this case, you have a newer device that might be using some newer technologies that are actually causing that limitation in distance. You could get an extender. So those are going to be available from Netgear. They're also going to be available from third parties. Generally, depending on the modem, it's going to be easiest for the functionality to get it directly from that same manufacturer. So if you have a Netgear router or wireless access point, I would get a Netgear wireless extender. And that should at least give you, I would say it would give you much more than, well, it might give you another 25 to 50 feet. I'm trying to think of the exact distance, but it can give you, it can at least extend it so your other iPad would work. But I would actually potentially test that as well, just to make sure that there's nothing wrong with the iPad itself. Since it's the only device having an issue, I would want to make sure to rule that out before you've got a device that may or may not work.
Okay. Thank you, Louie. Appreciate the call. On a related topic, let's go to Rick in Appleton. Rick, what's your question?
Yeah, hi. I had a question also about Wi-Fi extenders. And my question is, do they lower the available internet speed? And if so, how much?
And the extenders can lower the speed of your Wi-Fi, depending on how you're extending it. Exactly how much it actually degrades the performance depends on so many different factors, including the type of extender you have, what the speed of your actual internet connection is. For some people, you may never notice a thing. For some, it may be a significant degradation of service, but there's also so many factors. I couldn't give one answer. Do you have any extenders that you're using right now that you're having troubles with?
No, I haven't tried an extender yet. And my internet speed, my Wi-Fi internet speed, is only about 8 megabits per second. So my concern is if I'm using an extender to reach a couple of spots in my home where I can't get Wi-Fi, like, is that going to drop it down so much, you know, where it won't be very usable?
And I think in most cases, depending on what the distance is, extending it's probably not going to be, it's not going to degrade it significantly. One thing I always do when trying to look at different technology, because there's a lot of options out there, definitely read the reviews, see what other people are saying about the devices that they're using and the performance that they're seeing. About your internet, you noted it was 8 megabit. Have you tried plugging a device directly in your modem to do a speed test to see if it's different when it's wired versus wireless?
Yeah, I have. It's about the same. I get about 8 megabits per second on both Wi-Fi and plugged in.
Okay, so it at least seems that you're getting pretty good wireless performance. It's just extending it a little bit beyond. I would go ahead and try the extender. I don't think you're going to have a significant issue, but definitely take a look at the reviews. Also, take a look at reviews for anyone using the same model or manufacturer cable modem or wireless device that you have, just so you can get some other feedback. I use an extender at home, and I have an extender on my top floor, and I have my main wireless device in the basement. So I try to do that to get a good wireless signal upstairs and a good wireless signal downstairs. Overall, for what I use it for, it works fine. But picking the right device, I think, is going to give you a different experience. So definitely take care when reading the reviews.
Okay, Rick, read those reviews. Go online. Do your research. That really makes a big difference. Thank you for your call. Hi, Anne. In Madison, what is your question?
We have Wi-Fi at our house, and we have several different like tablets and desktop computer and laptop, you know, different things. And at one time or another, it seems like some one or two is having a hard time getting a Wi-Fi. And the message we get is that they cannot connect with or cannot locate the IP address. You know, it'll say locating IP address, and it'll try and try and try, and then it'll say cannot locate it. And it's not always the same device. It's different ones. So what does that mean?
So for... I'll kind of answer the one question about the IP address. So the IP address is basically an address that's given to a computer so it can access the internet. If the computer or device does not have an IP address, it basically has no idea where to find the internet, really. It helps it to find from where you are at home or at work to travel outside of your home or work to get to the general internet to access websites, data, or other services. So normally at home, you're going to have a router that's going to be giving your devices IP addresses. If your devices aren't getting IP addresses, it could be an issue where they don't have enough wireless signal to connect to get that IP address. It could be an issue with the device, which is a possibility. In this case, you have multiple devices having an issue, so I would kind of doubt that. But the other possibility is you might be having an issue actually with your router itself, which is generally that device that's going to allow you to share that one internet connection with all of these different devices. And for whatever reason, it's not giving all of your devices IP addresses. A couple questions I have is, how many devices do you have at home right now that are trying to connect to the internet?
Five or six, but not all at the same time, of course.
Okay. And have you noticed when you're trying to use the devices and it doesn't work, are you at a certain distance away from your main internet connection or router? Is it a specific time of day? Have you noticed anything, you know, any kind of correlation when you're trying to use it?
No, you know, we really haven't. And it could happen, like, my devices are both down in the basement. So maybe my laptop is working, but my cell phone isn't. And then upstairs, you know, they're right next, the people at the dining room table are right next to the router, and maybe one iPad will work and the other one won't. And no, it isn't, you know, the same ones or same time of day. We find ourselves very, very often, you know, unplugging everything at the router, you know, just unpowering everything for a few minutes and turning it back on, and that seems to help. But we just wondered if there was anything we could do to prevent it from happening.
There probably is. Normally, what I'd look at is, basically, we'd have to troubleshoot basically one step at a time. So, is it the router itself or the wireless device causing the issue? Personally, I would kind of think there might be an issue there. The only way to really test it is to actually have a different router to be able to use. If you do have friend or family, anyone who has a device you could test, I would recommend actually swapping it out and use it for a week. See how well it works. My guess is that you're having this issue fairly frequently, so you're probably going to be able to find out pretty quickly whether this is an issue that's going to be solved. I would probably look at the router first to see if that's going to be the problem. I doubt it's going to be the individual devices. However, it also could be that the devices are so different, they're kind of overlapping wireless signals and causing a lot of confusion with each other. But first, I would actually try to get a different router to test with to do that. If you never have any issues with these devices just anywhere else, whether you're, you know, just out in the general world at a store or another place with wireless and everything seems to work fine and it's only at home, I would focus on those home internet devices such as your router or even a wireless access point if you have one separate. But I would see if you can find a separate one to test with.
Could it possibly be the modem or the internet provider, Jesse, that there's a problem from? Or
it's a possibility. If the modem is separate, and you have, let's say, you have five devices, one of them's working fine, the other four aren't, In that case, the modem itself is still working because you're getting the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The other four, for whatever reason, if it is the note that they don't have an IP address or can't reach out to the internet, most likely it's an issue somewhere else. So it really is, if the internet works on at least one device, the modem itself is probably okay.
Okay, good to know. All right, well, thank you for that call, Ann. Let's go to John in Dunn. Hi, John, what's your question?
My question has to do with an accident I had. Unfortunately, I spilled some of the water from the dog's drinking dish onto my lap.
Oh, no.
And I'm wondering if there's some suggestion about, I've heard putting it in the oven with a heat turned down real low, but with some rice in there or some other kind of thing that would absorb it, or is there a product you can buy or what?
There's a few different things you can do. So the first thing I would do is just make sure you unplug the battery. Don't have any power connected to it. Do not hit the power button. Basically, just disconnect any power sources. And if you can, kind of keep it open so there's much surface area and air flowing through it, excuse me, to dry it out. There are a couple things you can do. I personally wouldn't put it in the oven. It could help with some of the heat to help dry it out. I would actually try to let it just dry it out in the air as much as possible, but rice is a good option. It will absorb water. They generally would recommend you can put it in rice and close it up so that it starts soaking in any of the moisture. Most people will say, you know, leave it for a couple of days. You know, don't turn it on. Let it dry out. After that, plug everything in and turn it on. And hopefully everything works. I would be careful about that for one thing. If you do have data that is important on that device, I would actually recommend trying to get the hard drive out, making sure the hard drive is dry, and making sure you get the data out first. Because if there is any kind of issue when you turn it on, even if the hard drive was fine before, it could do something and actually short out the hard drive, which then you have a completely different issue. So I would definitely recommend trying to make sure you can get any data off the hard drive and making sure that's dry before even trying to power it back on. One other option, and a lot of people have these laying around, you may or may not, whenever you get new things, just packaged stuff, they have these little silica gel packets. Those are there actually to absorb moisture. That's the whole purpose. They're there for packaging. If you've saved any of those will also be a good substitute for the rice. You can just throw those packets in, let it sit in there, keep them in the packet itself. They're going to absorb moisture just being in that general area, but then seal it and hopefully let it soak in the moisture for a little bit of time, and you can go ahead and try to turn it on. But I would just be concerned if you do have data and you're really, really concerned with it. I would try to get that first because you don't want to accidentally short it out.
And just with the rice, be careful. We had a caller not too long ago call in and say that she did that with her phone, and she had rice that was stuck in the area where you put your headphones and also for charging. So she had a really difficult time getting the rice out. So be careful. Be careful. Okay. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We've been talking with Jesse LeGrew. He's a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Jesse focuses on laptop and desktop security. Do you have a question for him? You can give us a call. We've been having some pretty full lines, but you can also send us an email. The address is ideas@wpr.org. Well, you want to make sure to listen tomorrow because it's our holiday bird show. Bill Volkert and Tom Schultz are going to be back with us, and we're going to look at summer birding and answer your questions about birds. It's always a popular show. Hope you can join us. But right now, we're talking about computers and technology and Wi-Fi with our guest, Jesse LeGrew. And we're going to go right back to the phones, and we're going to be talking with Susan in Madison. Hi, Susan. What's your question?
Hi. I have an iMac desktop with Safari as my browser. Google had been providing my Gmail, and I usually used it as a search engine. About a week ago, I turned on my computer, and Google had just taken over everything. They had decided they were going to be my new browser, and they wanted me to sign in again and give my password again, and they were going to connect everything seamlessly. And I got mad at them, and I went into the preference boxes and deleted Google everywhere I could find it. So now I get a message that I'm no longer connected to the server, so I need to reconnect there. And I also want a recommendation for a different email provider, and I'm willing to pay for that.
And as far as email providers, one I'll just recommend that I've used in the past is Microsoft. They do have Office 365, and they have a variety of different services that you can use. Some are free, some you can pay for, depending on exactly what you're looking for, because they do also have the full Office suite that you can use. I mean, it's apart from email alone, but they do have a lot of features that are really good. Personally, I like them, but there are also some other options, but the Office 365 suite works really well, and I've liked the email. So that is one possibility. On the Google side, as far as the email and the pop-up that you've seen, and I believe, and this is kind of making some guesses about what you might have on your computer. I have a feeling that you did have Google Chrome, one of the Google web browsers, installed. There could be a variety of reasons that was installed, but generally when you do load up Google, their browser does want you to connect to their services. So it is a very standard thing that they do for anyone who does download the browser. If you do want to reconnect your Mac so it can view email, there are a couple things you can do. One, if you do open up Safari, my guess is it will have everything connected still. When you did disconnect your Mac from the Google services, have you tried to reopen Safari to see if you were able to access Gmail?
Yes. I wasn't. I think I went into Safari. That's one of the places I went. And removed Google from the address. I guess it's the IP address.
Okay. In order to get access to your email, you can go to gmail.com, and it will have the field where you can just type in your email address and your password to reconnect to get access to your email again. One thing to note, if you are able to connect via Safari, it doesn't allow you to really download your messages. So they're still in Google's, you know, cloud services. If you did want to take those with you and then move to a different email service, you would actually need to use a different email program that would allow you to download those messages so you can retain them. That would be, you know, another question that I would have is, you know, do you want to keep the messages that Google does have stored in the cloud for you?
Yeah, I think I would want access to them, yes. Okay, so it's okay to just re-give Google my information again. I just was questioning their, you know, their motives. Okay.
Yeah, and I would verify. So when you do have that program, because I'm guessing it's a new program that popped up for you, and in my guess it is Google Chrome. In the upper left-hand corner when you're on your Mac, if you do have the program open, it should say Chrome in the upper left. And you should even be able to look at the preferences. Google Chrome will just prompt you for that information from the get-go, mainly because Google does want you to use their suite of services. I use their suite of services for a lot of personal stuff, and I have some work stuff separate. But it's a standard thing that Google does. There's always concerns with, you know, services and, you know, providing your password, but it is normal. As long as it is Google Chrome and it's not anything else that's abnormal, but I have a feeling in this case it's a standard thing that I wouldn't be concerned with, but I would just make sure you know exactly what program it's coming from. But it is something that does happen. I don't think that in this case anyone's trying to collect data from you, but it's always important to know exactly what program you're in, just to make sure in case you're giving your information into somebody else. But my guess is that it's probably the Google Chrome browser.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing to be cautious, Susan, but hopefully everything will work out for you. Thank you for your call. Let's go to Larry in Wauwatosa. Hi, Larry. What's your question?
I have an HP laptop. I'm running Microsoft Windows 10.3. I am being told that by people that the Microsoft security that inbuilt within Windows 10 is superior or equal to the McAfee that I'm paying for today, and I would like your opinion on whether that's true or not. I have no love affair with McAfee. It has worked for the last 3 years. I renew it each year annually, but if the inbuilt security within Windows 10 is as good or superior to it, I would just as soon switch to that because I believe it's free.
And for most cases, at least with Windows, the built-in security products that they have now are much better than they were, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. I think that the Windows 10 security would be good enough for most needs. The McAfee product that you're using, does it do antivirus protection, malware?
Yes.
Does it do firewalling?
Yes, it's the total protection package.
Okay. Most of the stuff built into Windows 10 is actually pretty good. I've used it before. Granted, I do use some separate antivirus that we have at the university. One thing to note about any kind of antivirus product, you can have, let's say you have half a dozen products, they might find something a little bit different. So it doesn't mean that one's necessarily better than another one. They just have potentially some different things that don't overlap. Some might find a virus a little bit sooner than another one. All of this is, you know, really based upon people and what people are finding out in the rest of the world and how that information is being collected. But I think it's probably okay to use the built-in Windows 10 products. They do work really well. They actually have some enhanced features that even if you know you're not using it, it's trying to do it anyway. For example, even on Windows Update, they do try to regularly look for specific vulnerabilities just to make sure that your computer doesn't have it and that you have that information. But I think the Windows 10 does work really well. It's going to do well to prompt you, and it is one that's being, you know, continually developed just like McAfee, and it is free. So I think it's also the difference of the cost benefit. Some people do want to pay a little bit more to get a different service that's not from Microsoft. And it's not that the Microsoft product is biased, but some people just like the added security of a third party being able to give a different opinion. But for me, I'd say the Windows 10 is good for most things.
Okay, there you have it. Thanks, Larry, for that call. Appreciate that. Let's go to Scott in Eau Claire. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning.
What question do you have?
Hey, I got a couple questions. First, I built my own computer, and I was getting an error on boot up through the BIOS, CPU fan not detected or CPU fan speed error, something like that, and I'd have to click through it. I went into the BIOS and told me not to notify me of it, so the computer boots up, you know, like normal. My only worry is because I don't have an actual CPU fan. It's on a water pump. It's liquid cooled. So I'm not sure if it's not getting the reading because it can't see the RPMs of the fan. But the one thing I was wondering is, since it's connected to a water pump to cool the CPU processor, if that pump was to hopefully not fail, but if it was to fail, will that still alert me, or... I've never had one fail on me, but because I do run my processor overclocked, and so it's running hot, so if that pump does fail, it's going to shut down rather quickly. And then my other question was, for a battery backup, I've had two battery backups that I've gotten off of Amazon, and they just haven't lasted very long. They seem to lose charge. And so I was just wondering if you had a battery backup for a computer that you would recommend.
Okay. What do you think?
So for the first, we'll talk about the basically the processor temperature. One thing I'd recommend is most of the motherboards that you're going to buy these days, the manufacturer will have software you can load within Windows or another operating system, so you can keep track of that temperature. And if it hits a certain threshold, it can shut down, and it won't, you know, stay on until it burns out. My guess is even the built-in information for the motherboard is probably going to shut it down anyway. I would recommend just installing any software that you can to make sure you can keep track of that temperature and that, potentially even test it just to see if it will shut it down. Put it as at an abnormally low temperature if you can set a threshold so that you can test it, make sure it shuts down. Because if you don't have a fan, it has no idea. One thing it does know is it does know the temperature. It should be able to tell you the temperature of the processor. And I would basically investigate that with the manufacturer. They're probably going to have a lot of stuff online. You probably already had it. You might have had a DVD or might be download only now. Take a look there, get their software, install it, and then kind of go from there to see what settings you can have. I would be very, very surprised if you didn't have that. If you don't, I personally would actually consider getting a different motherboard because most are going to have those features. And if you are water cooling it, you're going to want to make sure that you can shut it down if it hits a temperature threshold. Doesn't really matter how fast the fan is spinning if it's overheating anyway. So it should be able to get that data for you.
Okay, great. Was that it? Jesse, did I cut you off?
Oh, I have the power backup too.
Oh, great.
So the power backup... So a manufacturer that I've liked and I've used a lot is APC. They have a lot of range of products, and they do consumer, you know, just home or like big business level. So you can spend $50, you can spend, you know, thousands of dollars. The one thing I'll note is that you basically will, if you're, you know, going with any manufacturer battery backup, you're pretty much going to get what you pay for. So the more... you know, battery or you know, power storage that you have, you're going to be paying a little bit more money for it. And, you know, if you are concerned with the computer shutting down or keeping everything else running, spend a little bit more money and hopefully it's going to work well for you. I've liked the APCs in the past. I've used them for quite some time. I have noticed some work better than others, but when I do spend a little bit more money on one that has a little bit more features, it does work really well for me. It also does have integrated software. It can talk to Windows and everything else and make sure to shut down everything if things are running at a point where the power might run out.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call, Scott. Let's go to, a fellow Youper up in the UP of Michigan. Terry, what's your question?
Oh, yeah, I had a question on this on the new Windows 10 upgrade that they're currently rolling out, or have been for a month or so, and I have some concerns about it. I don't see much advantage to it, and plus I read a lot of horror stories about people losing their systems after upgrading to it. It's got a rollback feature, but, you know, that never doesn't mean anything. So I've been putting it off. It's downloaded, but I've been putting it off, haven't letting it install for a month now until I could get my act together. I've backed up my, I did image my C drive to a hard drive that I don't keep plugged in, recovery disk, USB stick. And so I just wondered what you had heard about it.
Well, what do you think, Jesse?
So, and I've been using Windows 10 for probably a year or two now. There have been some problems when people have upgraded from their existing system to Windows 10, and it's a possibility that issues are going to happen. Granted, at this point, they've had some time to change a few things, so the upgrade will go a little bit smoother. You've taken a lot of the precautions that are necessary when considering an upgrade, just because you never know if something's going to go well or not. For me, I do like Windows 10. I think it works well. I think there are some challenges with Windows 8 and 8.1 that people saw, especially just a dramatic shift in how things look and felt. Windows 10 does not have that that same challenge when using it for the very first time. One reason I'd recommend to go to Windows 10 is it's going to continue to be supported longer. So if you are running Windows 7, granted it's not running out tomorrow where you're not going to get updates or there are going to be any challenges there, but at some point you're going to need to upgrade to make sure that you are getting the latest upgrades, which include security software, any other functional updates. So there'd be a recommendation to upgrade Windows 10 just for that functionality. But one other concern that I would have, at least if you do have Windows 7, is, or any older operating system, do you have any programs that might break if you upgrade to Windows 10? Basically, maybe some software or hardware, it could even be printers, that might not be fully supported under Windows 10. That would be another concern that I would have, and it could be some evidence or some information that would help to instruct you whether you would want to upgrade or not.
Okay, hopefully that'll work out for you, Terry. I switched to Windows 10, and I didn't have any problems. It just took me a little while to get used to it. Interface is a little different.
Yeah, the interface is a little different. I used Windows 7, then 8, and then went to 10. 10 is much more natural, mm-hmm. so it worked a little bit easier.
I think if you do have that update, you're in much better shape than if you went from 7 to 10, right? There's quite a jump there.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, they've got most of the bugs worked out pretty much now, don't they?
Well, most.
Okay, most. All right. Our guest is Jesse LeGrew. He's a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. That's DOIT. He focuses on desktop and laptop security projects, and we've been talking about setting up your Wi-Fi and answering all of your technical and computer questions. If you have more technical questions, please give us a call, the number 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Stay with us. We'll be back right after the news. We're talking about computers today with our guest, Jesse LeGrew. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Jesse stops by every other month to help us with our computer questions. He is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Have you been having problems with your computer, your smartphone, or a tablet? Well, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. And you can also post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. Jesse, before we went to the news break, we've been talking to Terry from the UP, and he was asking about upgrading Windows 10, and we kind of misunderstood what he said. Instead of wanting to go from another version like 7 or 8 to 10, he actually has 10, but wants to do the latest upgrade of it. So what were you able to find out about it?
So, and I believe this is the latest upgrade for what they call the Creators Update, which is Windows 10 build 1703. You know, most people don't know that. I just happen to. I've upgraded in the past. I haven't had any issues with it. I think it always depends on kind of what you're doing. Overall, I haven't seen anything as far as significant challenges or everything completely breaking because of it. There may be some software that potentially could be incompatible, but for what I've done, I haven't noticed the problem. Can't guarantee no one else will, but overall, it seemed to be generally okay.
All right. Well, I think then maybe you're safe, Terry. So thanks for calling back and reminding us that we aren't perfect. We appreciate that. Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to be talking to Peter in Wauwatosa. Hey, Peter, what's your question?
Hi. I was calling about a UVerse modem that I have.
Go ahead. Hello? Mm-hmm. Go ahead. We can hear you.
Hello?
Uh-oh, I don't think Peter can hear us.
Hello?
Okay, well, Peter apparently had a question about accessing his modem, and he wants to get to the inner settings by typing an IP address, and he's not sure how. So, Jesse, what can he do to get there?
So, for this, and in this case, I have to guess a little bit. So, every ISP is a little bit different. You get a modem from them, and there's a variety of ways to access it. And generally, you're going to have an internal IP address you can access from. At least the one I found for, I believe it was UVerse, and the IP address was 192.168.1.254. Basically, type that into the address bar from your browser, hit enter, and it should bring up the display with information about your modem, so you can see how it's connected, different logs. It also tells you signal strength and a lot of other information that's good for diagnostics. It will depend. I actually recommend Googling it. It's probably going to be the easiest way to do it. You might actually be able to just call your internet service provider. I don't think there'd be any reason why they wouldn't allow you to see that information. It is on your home network and actually in your home. So they would actually be able to give you the exact IP address. Mine at home is different, but I have a different service provider.
Okay. Well, hopefully we were able to answer that question, Peter, and I'm sorry that you couldn't hear us. Let's go to Bill in Racine. Hi, Bill. Thanks for staying with us. What's your question?
Thanks for taking the call. Anyways, I went and purchased a hotspot, and I'm using the hotspot only for a PC. Bought it at the big box store. And anyways, they suggested you have to buy a card every month, every 30 days. And they asked me, well, what are you using it? What do you use it for, your computer? And I said, strictly email. Or I might search the price of a product, something like that. Well, anyways, I bought 2 gigs, and I ran out of it. I ran through the 2 gigs very quickly. So I called them, meaning the hotspot company, and said, please tell me how I could ever go through that quickly. And they said, well, what are you doing? And fine, you know, you're using it for the internet. And they said, do you do any streaming? I said, I don't stream at all. Nothing. Zero. Well, then I asked them, I said, could you please give me a breakdown of where the 2 gigs went? You know, in terms of internet or whatever. They couldn't do it. And then I said, well, if I use the internet for, say, 10 minutes, you know, what is that in megabytes? And then I'll make the conversion. They couldn't do that either. Can you help me? You know, if I'm using it for 10 minutes, what that would be in megabytes.
So, and this might be... So I guess we'll start with a few questions. So what kind of computer do you have? Do you have Windows, Mac OS?
I've got Windows 10.
Okay. And what...
It's a Dell computer. It's relatively new.
Okay. And what web browser do you generally use?
Google.
Okay. So the, and it was at Google Chrome, if I'm?
Chrome, right.
Okay. They do have something within Chrome. They call it Net Internals. It shows you bandwidth and what's being used, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what it's being used for. And you can actually, well, strangely enough, I guess Google it. it's in your browser. You can actually type in Chrome:// and then net-internals. And they also have other data in there, but it will have bandwidth usage. That's one way you can at least see what kind of web browser traffic is being uploaded or downloaded. One thing I'd note, is there's a lot of different websites that might be constantly streaming data without you really wanting them to. That includes even websites such as Facebook. I noticed, you know, one of my friends, they had Facebook on their phone and they didn't know why so much data was being used. In the last 3 days, Facebook used 5 gigabytes of data, and that's on an iPhone. And it's just because Facebook is constantly streaming data, and it's talking back and forth between the provider. So it could be other web traffic in the background. You're not actually intending to stream data, and it's doing it anyway. But it also could be something like Windows updates. And Windows updates, you can actually change the settings. So you can, they have like a low bandwidth mode. Basically, it will not download Windows updates or anything else if you want it to. That could be another option. So there's a lot of things that actually could be using internet on your device, and it may not be your web browser. And there's some other tracking tools you can use internally. Windows does have something called the Task Manager that you can actually see your internet usage based on the program that's running. And that could be Windows, it could be Chrome, it could be Internet Explorer. It might give you a bit of data, but the first thing I do is basically turn off everything, only open the web browser, and then see what your data usage is like.
Okay. Well, thanks for that call, Bill. Let's go to Alice in New London. Hi, Alice. What's your question?
Yes. I just recently got a computer that has Windows 10 on it. But what kind of bothers me is if I'm on the internet and something stops working, like it could be my printer, maybe it's a web page that suddenly isn't working, I'm accustomed to going into Task Manager, finding out what it is, and then just ending that. But with Windows 10, I don't get enough detail in Task Manager. It won't tell me all the various things that are open. All it does is tell me what that my browser is open.
And I think I noticed that actually myself too when originally starting to use Windows 10. They have something normally when you open up Task Manager, which there's a variety of ways to do it. Do you see a tab that's called Details?
You know, I don't have it in front of me now, and I don't really remember.
And I would look at the Details tab, because I think that's actually the same thing that I noticed. They changed up a little bit of the terminology from the previous version of Task Manager, but it does have an option to actually list very similar to what you saw before, so that you can see each individual process, so you can highlight it and end the process instead of it being kind of grouped by application. So they do have the option, but they just relabeled it a little bit.
And Alice, I can say I did the exact same thing. And yeah, just look at the details and everything will be there for you. So let's go to Kathy in Beaver Dam. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hey, Jesse, I used to be a coworker with you at DoIt. And I've retired about 2.5 years ago, but I've only semi-retired. I work for a company out of Green Bay. And we provide high-speed internet, high-speed is kind of a relative term, but high-speed internet to people that live in the country. And it's an alternative to satellite. The particular company that I work for does not have any contracts and no data limits. So people who live in the country just need to search out companies like this one. There are a number of different companies that we provide. We have towers. And it's a cell type signal that goes out. In some of our technology, we have to have line of sight. In other technology, and depending on the county we're in, we can do an LTE technology that doesn't require line of sight. And then one other thing, Jesse, when people are, and I don't know if you've ever run into this or not, but there were two situations that we had where people had, in the first case, people had the router in the basement, had an excellent signal, got upstairs, and they couldn't get it was a weak signal at best. And it turns out, after much discussion and troubleshooting and things like that, we found out that she had a ceramic tile floor, and underneath that ceramic tile floor, she had a warm floor product that was encased in aluminum mesh. And that was preventing the signal from reaching the first and second floors of the home. In another case, they had the router on the first floor, but they couldn't get a signal in the basement. He had one of these old-fashioned metal ceilings in the basement that was blocking the signal.
Okay, well, that explains a lot. And thank you for your information, Kathy. I'm sure there's a lot of people out in the country right now who are going to be Googling that. Have you heard of those, Jesse?
Yeah, there's a lot of different services like that that are available that, and I think it's similar to, they have kind of Metropolitan Wireless, and it depends on, you know, what locations you're on, but there's a lot of great services popping up where that didn't exist 5 years ago.
No.
Where, you know, you really couldn't depend on anything else outside of cell phone or other service. So it's a great new option for people.
It's nice to hear about the line of sight, because I know anybody that had trees around their house couldn't do that. So if that there's another option now, that's wonderful. We did have Dawn email us a question. She says her laptop has gotten really slow and she was advised to scan the computer in safe mode. Now she uses Malware Bytes online and she tried to do this in safe mode, but it won't let her connect to the internet to use the malware. How can she scan the laptop if she can't get online?
So in this case, there are two options for safe mode. One is with networking. However, in this case, if you do have any kind of infection or malware, I would recommend not connecting to the internet just because it could kind of reinfect itself or do anything. You're kind of caught in a little conundrum here, because what you really need to do is actually download the offline malware bytes that you can download, install, and update the definitions, then go into safe mode and then run the scan using that product. And any of the online options won't be available if you're in safe mode with everything turned off. But if you can boot in a normal mode, download and install it, and then do the updates, then reboot back into safe mode, I recommend doing that. Otherwise, you can download it on a friend's computer, use a flash drive or something else, plug it into your computer. Generally, those programs will install fine in safe mode. At least I've done it before with Malwarebytes, and it has an offline updater file. So there are some options there. So find somebody else's computer and put it on a flash drive, or boot into normal mode first, then boot into safe mode and run it with that the installed client.
Okay, great. That totally makes sense. Our guest today is Jesse LeGrue. He's a technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology. And we do have a couple of lines open. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Susan, and she's in Madison. Hi, Susan. What's your question?
Hi. I'm working with a 10 or 12 year old laptop, an HP. It works great, but when I'm on the internet, I'm using Google Chrome, Windows 10, and I mostly read articles related to international and national news and some local news. It slows down so much for certain locations. For example, local one, channel 3000. It's so slow that I just give up. I cannot access the information. It's very frustrating. Or it could be I'm on the BBC looking at news and trying to click on certain articles and then trying to read down in those articles. Everything just kind of comes to a stop. I'm trying to figure out if there's anything I can do to have that not happen.
And that's a great question. Actually, it's one thing that I've run in with a lot of websites. They tend to be very content or media rich, meaning that they have ads. They have different sources of information on the web page that are coming from a variety of different locations. The web page never really even fully loads because it's continually streaming information, and that's partially causing that problem where you're trying to browse through something and, you know, it might be a pop-up or just other information being streamed on the page is causing you to not be able to read or load the content that you want. I don't have an actual solution for this one. The only thing I could recommend is if there is a way to view the website with all of that content, it would be a big benefit. And potentially even if you're interested in the content as far as the words versus the other images or media, you might be able to browse the web pages with all the images turned off. And if you are able to turn off all of the media except for text, it might allow it for you to read it and get the content without any of the other stuff you don't want in there. But it's a very common problem with a lot of websites that do have so much media content just packed in there.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, and it does seem to be the news sites, and I'm sure it's because they want to have up to date. But it is very frustrating to read that. So I'm with you on that, Susan. Maybe we should call these people. But WPR's website does not do that, right, Jesse?
Correct.
Okay. Let's go to Tom in Hancock. Hi, Tom. What's your question?
Hi. Well, recently I was working on my computer, and all of a sudden I had this full screen message that you're being hacked, and it sort of like froze the thing up. And to make a long story short, I was on the phone. Then I had a call that I was supposed to call this number, and then I ended up on the phone with these people for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and they supposedly finally cleared it up, and then I ended up with $200 worth of anti-hacking software that I signed up for, and it was only in retrospect that I thought, what the hell did I just do?
Oh, it doesn't sound good, Jesse.
So as far as was it a scam or not? I can't say for certain because I don't know exactly what popped on your computer. My hunch is yes, is that it was most likely something that was kind of a phishing or a scam attempt to get you to buy software that you probably didn't even need. There's a lot of different software out there that does a variety of different things to either make your life very, very difficult or, you know, impossible to use your computer. A lot of it's called ransomware, where, you know, they might encrypt your computer and not allow you to use it until you pay a certain amount of money. Then they basically hit a button and fix it, and you're able to access your content again. Did you manage to capture any pictures or screenshots of the information that you saw?
No, I don't think so. I do have a supposed contract. The outfit is OMZ. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Have you, Jesse?
I have not. One thing I'd recommend, because if you paid for the service with a credit card or other information, it might be worth contacting your bank, because if they have had reports from other people who are using, you know, their banking services, there might be something that they could actually give you more information that I couldn't, because they know where the money is kind of, at least to a point, where the money's going to, and that might be something that you can take a look at.
And a lot of times they'll even give him the money back, I think. Our consumer protection experts are actually going to be on Thursday. So for anybody that wants more information about these phishing, scamming, ransomware things, these are the people that you want to talk to about that, because they always know what the latest thing is. Let's go to Scott in Madison. Hi, Scott. What's your question?
Hi. Oh, this is a really timely program for me.
Okay.
I awoke this morning and my computer had shut down and apparently was starting to or attempting to restart, and it's hung at starting Windows. And so I've done pretty much everything that I can think of. I've tried booting into safe mode and it loads a bunch of system files and then it just hangs. And I suppose this is what's happening in the background when I get that screen that says starting Windows, but not really starting Windows.
Okay, Jesse, we've got about 2 minutes left, so think fast.
So there's a couple of things I'd take a look at. What model computer do you have?
It's a homebrewed PC, Windows 7.
Okay. The one thing I'd probably take a look at first is it could be slower to load up if you do have a failing hard drive. So you can, a lot of times, you unfortunately need a supercomputer to run the check, but you'd probably want to check to see if your hard drive itself is damaged. If that's fine, most likely there is an issue with Windows, or you might have to use the recovery tools to either roll back. You know, it could have been an update that went bad. But I would actually run a check on the hard drive first, because that could cause the issues as well as a bad update.
Okay, well, good luck with that. I also just wanted to pass this on. Jay on Facebook said that if you're going to use that rice with one of your devices to dry it out, that and try to put your actual jack in it, in the device, so that the rice doesn't fall into the hole, which makes total sense. We've been talking with Jesse LeGrew, a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Thanks to Michelle Johnson for on-air production and to Dave Potraz for technical direction. Hope you can join us tomorrow for our special 4th of July Bird Show. Bill Volkert and Tom Schultz are going to be back with us to take a look at summer birding and answer your bird-related questions. I'm Jill Najoe, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller. I'm hoping he's enjoying the golf course today. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. And please stay with us. There's always more to come.